Welcome back, live from Barcelona at TechEd 2014. I'm joined now by Jason Zander, right from the keynote. You had a few minutes. You had a chance to decompress. That's not normal. Normally, I interview the keynote speaker literally as he's walked off the stage.
Wow. Yeah.
So we gave you a few minutes.
Running across the hall. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, that's good. We got caught up.
So, Jason, your title now, Corporate Vice President Azure.
For Azure, yep.
Now, our Channel 9 audience should know you pretty well. You've been around for a while. You're a dev guy.
Yes.
And so now you have this Azure piece. And the big story, and one of the big things that I took away from the keynote today, was the enterprise.
Yep.
And the infrastructure and everything that kind of comes into play. And we're going to kind of dive deep into some of these topics because there's a lot of things that I really kind of took, and I'm like, wow, I didn't really look at things that way. But talk a little bit, just from a personal basis, this is what we love to do on Channel 9, right? We like to kind of get the inside scoop. The transition, as you start to move from hardcore coding into that more infrastructure-oriented world, because Azure's that all-encompassing piece, right?
Well, it's been really fun. I mean, I really enjoyed my time working with the developer community. I still do, actually. I mean, the system is designed to handle it, and I'll probably always be a dev at heart. I write code on the weekends. I've got apps in the App Store, so I really do enjoy that still. But working on the Azure side has given me more insights on the infrastructure components. I mean, I never thought I'd have to figure out, what happens when a dam in Oregon actually has a bulge and our, power levels go down, or, a bunch of other, infrastructure sort of components like that. I mean, the freezing metal of rates and concrete as you build out buildings. It's like, wow, I have a comp sci degree, and we're talking about material sciences. But, it's part of this, getting this worldwide footprint and figuring those components out. And obviously, we want to blend the software and the platform that we're building, as well as the hardware, and get the best utilization out of both. And so it's actually fascinating. It's a brand new side to that. And I think in a lot of ways, I've written lots of products, lots of code, but then also figuring out and spending more time on the deployment, the management side, and really owning it and running the services 24/7, 365, in a global perspective, it does give you a new perspective. So I've been very grateful for that opportunity, and I've been having a blast doing it.
So now on your main monitor, instead of having Visual Studio on the main monitor, you've got an ops dashboard on the main monitor with Visual Studio and a secondary one, right?
I have both. I'm never giving up Visual Studio. It's an awesome tool. So I still like to write code. But I've got basically our portal up and making sure we know what our status looks like and all of our KPIs. And 24/7, 365, massive scale.
And this is what I think is kind of cool, because we've really kind of been talking about, the DevOps world, and you've talked about it as well. I mean, a recent keynote, I want to say last year here at TechEd, you talked about the DevOps perspective. A lot of times when we talk DevOps, it's a lot of from the IT side. It's the IT side working with the developer side. It's really interesting to kind of get this perspective from the other side. You are the hardcore coder. Now looking at that, as I mentioned, that little piece of, I've got the ops console running.
Yeah. Well, and in particular when we build up the services themselves, making sure that, our own services that we're building, that the dev team understands, what does it take to deploy it? How do I handle all the versioning work? How do I do all the telemetry and those sorts of systems as well? I mean, there's a core part to that, to being able to operate it. And, when I start including the operational aspects of it, when we do have, capacity starts to redline, or what does that look like? How do you actually deal with that? And then frankly, how do I go back into the software and actually build it to be smarter and, elastically scale and more dynamic in those components. So this environment of writing services, this distributed application, the scale out, the high availability and those techniques, I mean, it really is a lot of even new type of code to write, and then how you actually operate it as well. But then, of course, we want that same functionality to make sure that it does a great job, for our existing workloads that we have. That's where we've got, the virtualization services, infrastructure as a service, those components as well. So, I think we've really built up a great, portfolio that gives you flexibility across all of those scenarios.
Hey, don't forget, folks, you guys can ask your questions to Jason. Just simply scroll down a little bit there on the webpage and type in your question. We'll get them to Jason. I want to get into the keynote. Now, you didn't hold back. When you came out, you jumped right in, and you brought up the staggering number of these connected devices, and then kind of set the stage for the challenges that we all face in IT. it's something that when I have conversations with our IT folks and other people, I'm constantly bringing up. It's really a new world.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to kind of tell stories, oh, yeah, this is, but if I stand back and I look at what IT looked like 5 years ago, it's not even anywhere close to what we're facing now and in the future.
No, that's absolutely true. And the connected devices thing to me is just extremely fascinating. One of my teams is actually the Azure Internet of Things team. And so they're actually working on technology that allows us to connect millions of devices and be able to do millions of messages per second. In fact, we didn't cover it in the keynote today, but one of the things we have is general availability of event hubs, for example, which is, you know, technology designed specifically for that. Now, this one's just staggering, because if you think about the volume of devices that are out there, the volume of data that's going to come through, and then the ability to reason over that, you know, use things like HD Insight to do, you know, MapReduce, but more importantly, even Azure Machine Learning, you know, to get new insights. And we're talking to companies that have not traditionally been software companies, and they're starting to see the fact that really software is changing the way that those businesses go, the way people experience their products, and you get more connectivity between those. So that number is just going to keep exploding, and we're going to have to build out, you know, the technology that's required to scale with it. It's a bunch of new stuff that we have to do. Now, we're building a bunch of that on my team, but, you know, in some ways, I think as an industry, we've just scratched the surface with that.
Well, you talk about scale. Something that kind of popped up in my mind as I was watching is hyperscale. You use the term hyperscale. Go into that a little bit more and talk a little bit more about what is it that you're targeting and I mean, hyperscale, we talk scaling, and depending on the size of your infrastructure, right? It could be hundreds or thousands of servers. We're taking it to a whole other level at this point.
We're talking orders of magnitude that are there. I mean, if you know, the kind of question you want to ask is, if somebody came to you tomorrow and said, I need 200 petabytes and I'd love to run 100,000 cores, you know, what would your reaction be? And our reaction is, great. We're happy to help you. And I think there's only a few vendors that can do that. I think a really great example of this was the Titanfall launch on Xbox One and the Respawn team that wrote that. And it's an application that can only run with Azure in the back. I mean, the physics and the game matching and everything else, you can't play it alone on the console. You have to have it on the back. We actually ran that on top of Azure, and we pulled together over 100,000 cores to handle the launch. And when you think about that, that's a team of like 10 to 15 developers, you know, being able to take advantage of all this capital that we have built up. But you really only have to take, you know, and use the VMs that you actually need to run the environment. Mm-hmm. So you're only paying by the minute for the stuff that's required. If you think about the lifetime of a game, you know, you probably have a really big spike at first when you have brand new users, and then, you know, it may change, and then you add new updates. You know, I mean, it may go up and down. And if you had to imagine going off and building all the hardware and the data centers in that capacity where you didn't know if it'd be used constantly, how would you even do that? So there's the staggering scale piece of it that I think we can support. I think also just it enables these new business models. Small teams can take advantage of really huge compute capacity and power. They can start solving questions, you know, problems in a brand new way that you haven't before. The Towers Watson example was another good one that we, you know, used in the keynote today, and the ray tracing demo that Mark showed. I thought that one was fantastic, because it does take like a day for that thing to run on my lap, you know, the machine that you had locally. And you saw we did it on stage in like 2 minutes, which is, that's impressive.
You bring up a great point as you talk about small dev teams. You know, IT, the pressures on IT, whether it be development, whether it be infrastructure, it's about, we got to squeeze more out, right? It was years ago they stopped backing up the armored car into IT and just giving us all the money, right? That's long gone.
Yeah.
So we have to do more with a lot less. And the thing that really kind of caught my attention, what you just mentioned with the Titanfall piece, you've got 10 developers.
Yeah.
And then you don't know today if you're at launch day. So we're gonna launch this game tomorrow. And when you turn that switch at midnight, you don't know if you're going to have to support 50 guys.
Yeah.
Or 150,000 up to millions of guys, to be able to do that literally on the fly, it's pretty impressive.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the other things we announced today was the new batch service, you know, the job scheduling as a service, and it's designed specifically to make it easy to do this sort of thing. Now, you know, some of the big examples I mentioned, you know, 100,000 cores for Xbox and those sort of things, I do think we'll see more and more of those in the future, because there's this notion of, I flip things on its head, compute's no longer scarce, you know, how do I solve problems in new ways? I mean, if I'm doing oil and gas, for example, if I could use, you know, 100,000 cores on that, would I find more oil? Would I find more gas? You very well might. Now, there's also some advantages, you know, those are kind of at the massive end of the scale. I think there's also advantages for every enterprise, really, because when you think about it, how often do you wind up doing, like, you know, quarterly close, you know, on financials, you know, for business?
Yeah.
Maybe you have a holiday rush period where you're going to come in and you have a holiday season for retail, you know, for example. And those are cases where I do get spiky workload. And to your point, I don't know exactly what's required. And that's why this kind of elasticity that I can build in, I can scale it up and down, and frankly do auto-scaling on it to match what the requirements are, that's like super powerful. You know, and then the per minute billing on a virtual machine, it's like, look, I'm only going to use what is actually required. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I get all the power and I have that flexibility with it too.
We've got a question from Polly. Are you planning any new features for Azure Cloud Services? Because a lot of things have been popping in, things like the database side or infrastructure as a service, but that dev kind of has cloud service piece.
Yeah, and we're going to continue to evolve cloud services. I mean, you've seen us definitely do a lot around, you know, the overall PaaS models. We're working on additional, you know, programming model, you know, insights that we'll have coming out in the future. But yeah, we're going to continue to add new flexibility to that. We've got, you know, debugging diagnostic tools and things like that that we're working on as well. So yeah, it's definitely an area of emphasis for us. We don't have anything today that we're announcing.
Frankly, sure.
We had so much, you know, cool stuff. I mean, that's the other thing about the team is we're basically in continuous delivery mode. I mean, I'm pushing the team to basically, you know, every one of my teams to basically ship once a week for services. And it's taken us a while from some teams going from every 4 months originally when I, you know, first joined Azure and then bring it back down. And, you know, most of the teams we've gotten down to a weekly ship cadence, which for services is amazing. And you know, but to be honest, it just changes the way you work, and that means that, you know, we're able to bring out new features constantly as you see, you know, new things coming through.
Yeah, the slide that you brought up during the keynote where you talked about, so this year we added these, I want to say 112 or whatever.
Yeah, 300 new features actually.
Oh, okay, there you go.
You know, over a year, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
No, I mean, the team just basically keeps on going, right? I mean, we'll do some synchronization points where we look for big, you know, cross-team collaboration sort of things, like, hey, you know, the new portal that we're working on, or, you know, the new Azure Resource Manager. Those are things that require many teams to coordinate. We'll do, you know, some sync-up periods on those, but after that, basically the teams are in continuous ship mode. You know, we're basically like, hey, you just keep going. There's no central, you know, war rooms. We used to have them, the ship rooms, you know, that kind of thing. Just, you know, ship and go and constantly. Sometimes it's like, wow, that's cool. We do that now, huh? So, yeah, let the teams be creative and get it going, you know, and just like, you know, run like hell, basically.
That's awesome. So, Paul, thanks for your question. Of course, you at home, feel free to ask your questions to Jason. Just simply go down in the forum, fill out your question. There's something that came up in your keynote. You talked about enterprise grade.
Yes.
And I want to, two parts to this one. What does it mean to you? And then secondly, when we talk enterprise grade, does that mean I have to run enterprise scale to get that kind of solution?
Yeah. And the answer, yeah, I'll answer the first one, and the other answer is no. I mean, I can take advantage of, you know, the whole thing. Enterprise grade really to us is around the resiliency. It's around security. It's around compliance. It basically means that I feel comfortable writing, you know, my mission critical applications for my enterprise. You know, so it means that we're going to give you that secure connectivity we mentioned with ExpressRoute today. I think that's a great example of that. You know, just the compliance work that we've done, you know, to enable that component as well. So it's basically, if you're an enterprise and I have enterprise workloads, do I feel comfortable targeting this, right? Is it, you know, because today, you know, I might be setting up my own data center and I'm making that thing available and I'm the one that's managing the software, operating it, and I know that it works incredibly well. You know, do I trust, you know, that cloud to be able to handle that? Now, that's also why we provided Azure Pack, so people can actually take, you know, this version of Azure and be able to run it on their own. Then they can combine their hardware with that software as well. But, you know, that's basically, you know, what we're looking for. Now, the features that we provide there are basically available to everyone. You know, if it's something like ExpressRoute, that's where I'm doing direct connections between data centers. And you're probably running at a scale where, well, I have data centers, I'm operating them, they're there. You know, that puts you into that same sort of bucket. But a lot of the other features we're doing, you know, inside of enterprise grade for, you know, compliance for various industries, you know, you don't have to be a you know, huge, humongous, you know, kind of enterprise to be able to take advantage of those.
I think it's kind of getting to the new world, and you can't, going back to what the first question when we talked about the new world of all this connectivity. Well, you do now have, even as a small business, you've got these. Well, I've now got to worry about privacy of data. Now yeah. I've got to worry about security, and who knows? You see how fast some of these companies go from running in their garage. You see the commercial in the States, right? The kids in their garage, and you know,
yes, the startups
grandpa comes out and the kid gets off his cell phone. We're going public, right?
Yes.
You know that.
Exactly.
That's how rapid this world works. So, I think that's one of those important things, particularly as we look at enterprise and customers I talk to. We sometimes get a lot of like, oh, you have to be running this massive thing in order to do
yeah.
it. It's not true.
Well, I think that, you know, this to me is part of the disruption we're seeing in these industries. The example of, you know, the Respawn team that did the Xbox, you know, launch, Xbox One launch with Titanfall. They wrote that application. That small team taking advantage of all of that, you know, capital and capacity, it's a very disruptive thing. Now, imagine an industry where someone figures out a way to take a small team, be able to write new software that has, you know, high availability and does scale out, takes advantage of all the data storage, all the machine learning, you know, all these advanced techniques that, you know, maybe heretofore took a lot of specialization, a lot of customization to go build those solutions. But, wow, okay, but now a small team can come along and actually use all this to kind of do that. That's very disruptive. Mm-hmm. And so now the question you have to ask yourself is, for my business, do I feel like I'm keeping up with that? Do I feel like I have, you know, solutions that I can take advantage of as well? Because otherwise someone else is going to take advantage of it, and then, wow, then what happens? Now, I think sometimes when people see this, they start thinking like, well, hold on a second. If the software is doing more, then what do I do? And I think the key thing that we should keep in mind is that the rate of computing and the volume of work that we need to do is expanding exponentially. And so it's, you know, what's going to happen is our software and some of these components are getting better at doing the management, more of the self-service component as well, but our footprint is also starting to expand. And we've added also new scenarios, the MDM scenarios that we talked mm-hmm. about today for device management. I mean, those are brand new scenarios. We have to go in, we got to build solutions, we got to go figure it out. So I actually think there's a continued expansion of the work that we have to do, and you know, every, you know, professional here, IT professional, developer, should be a very exciting opportunity for them. You know, but what is going to change is, you know, we're getting this new technology, we are generating new efficiencies because, you know, basically it's being demanded of us.
One of the points that you made in the keynote was getting, you know, the cloud technology or this enterprise grade solutions does not always, with the Microsoft platform, rely upon you having to go to Azure or public cloud. It can be hosted,
yep,
or it can be run your own.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that you talked about was the cloud platform system,
yep,
right? And the CPS. The question I have for you is, what is the thinking point, CPS versus building my own private cloud using Azure Pack?
Yeah. Yeah, well, no, it's a great question. I think the thing that, and we have for the folks that are actually here, and we're kind of on the expo hall right next door, definitely go check out CPS over at the booth. It's really awesome. The thing for us, you know, on CPS is it really does give you that fully integrated solution. Because, you know, as I mentioned in the keynote, oftentimes we find that people are trying to deploy private cloud, and they're trying various options, and multiple vendors have solutions, and, you know, trying to figure out how to actually go make this work. And, you know, really, we believe that the private cloud, you know, should not require you to spend all your time building, you know, custom scripts and bringing in a lot of folks to be able to do that. Again, I want you to be able to concentrate on your business and your business problems and not necessarily those components. So the cool thing about CPS is that, you know, look, we already tested the hardware, we certified it, and we showed an example with Capgemini in the keynote today of their usage. And, you know, really, by the time you order it, the hardware, the software, they're already there. And you just energize the system and hook it up. I think that's pretty darn cool. So yeah, you're not talking about taking weeks or months to get this thing up and running. There's the device, hook it up, and you're ready to go. Now you can concentrate on the pieces that you're really interested in, like which plans do I want, which images do I want to run internally, you know, for, you know, my development, my engineering staff that's actually targeting those. So I think, you know, that really is an awesome solution. Now, Azure Pack itself, though, you can still use it without CPS. I think the CPS is a great way to get started, but Azure Pack is designed, you can run it with your own hardware. What that means is then you're taking the hardware and you're combining it with the cloud software that we have, and you're basically doing the binding of those two things together to make sure that works. But it runs on top of VMM. That was the demo that we did today. So if you're already running in a virtualized environment, you know, with System Center, or Windows Server, Hyper-V, that's the same environment that we're using. So it is battle-hardened software. So you absolutely get it up, and that gives you the, you know, the ultimate control.
Yeah, and Jeff's going to be along a little later on today.
Great.
We're going to have him come along and talk more about that stuff. That was a really cool demo.
It's really cool. It's really cool.
So Tim Anderson asks, if Azure is updating rapidly, how quickly is Cloud Platform System kept up to date for the parts that we have in common?
Yeah. No, that's, and it's an excellent question, because in this case, what we're doing is, as you point out, as Tim points out in the question, we're rapidly evolving Azure itself, and of course, we want to keep these two things the same. Now, our intent on this one is we will do the new innovation for brand new services. We'll do those in the public cloud to start. Now, the reason for that is it gives us the ability to, you know, do a lot of testing. We can run things in preview. You know, this massive scale that we're talking about, we can run millions of users, tons of volumes, and we make sure that it's, you know, basically really battle-hardened and ready to go. So that's where we're going to start with that. We actually then make it available in multiple geographies around the world. And we think that's the right way to go off and go harden that. Now, the next thing is for, you know, CPS. And in this case, we're really talking about Azure PAC, which is the software component that runs as part of CPS. And here, what we'll do is we'll take the services that people really want to have for their private cloud deployment, and we'll bring those back into that Azure PAC and therefore into CPS environment. The first version that we have out there supports virtualization. So I can, you know, VMs, I can do SQL, you know, I can do websites, I've got service bus in there. You know, basically, a bunch of stuff that I need to really go build, you know, some core workloads, and the consistent environment APIs and how I manage it in both places. So I can even make that a burst scenario. I can do dev and tests. I can do dev tests in the cloud, but not with confidential data. Then I can turn around and deploy it internally. Say I've got certain types of regulatory requirements for releasing code, you know, stress testing in the financial industry. I can do all those things as well. And the last part of Tim's question there, so that's kind of the cascade of features. The last part of this too is, like, how do I keep that up to date, which is a very astute question. You know, our plan in thinking of this one is we have released regular updates of Azure PAC. You know, I think we're not going to go off and release new versions that we would expect people to pick up on a weekly basis like we do on the public piece. You know, what we're planning to do is work more on probably a quarterly basis so that you can get the next version that comes through. Here again, we want to make sure you have an opportunity to try it out, make sure it works. Like, for example, in your custom hardware, we'll do the certification for CPS itself to make sure that that works as well. So you will still be able to go in a rapid update, but I think for some enterprises, what we hear is, look, I don't want you touching the environment that rapidly, but you know, we don't want to be that far out of date. You know, so my goal would be to see that we're never really more than 6 months out of date with the public cloud updates and that you know, the features that we've made available for that.
And that's really cool, because I mean, I've run enterprise IT shops, and that's always been the challenge. I mean, we would only get up to date when it was time to go buy new servers. Now, and now you've got this potential solution to run things on premises, and now maybe I'm looking to explore, dabble a little bit, start taking advantage of some of the public Azure services. Mm-hmm. And there was a piece that I think it caught my attention. I'd like to highlight it a little bit more. Getting started. There are certain kind of scenarios that you guys have really made available to make it easy to start getting involved in public cloud.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, a couple of examples we have there. For one thing, I think the operational insights product that we announced today, that service, that's an awesome one as a way to get going. I mean, as we talked about during the keynote, and Jeff demoed the kind of tail end of that scenario, being able to drop an agent onto my servers and start pumping telemetry up, and then the intelligence packs are going off and analyzing all that data for you, and it, you know, it's the common set of stuff that you'd want, you know, the capacity, the security, those sort of things as well. I think it's actually an awesome way to get started, because it acknowledges the fact that, look, I've got my data center, it's up and running. I mean, I'm otherwise happy with it, right? I mean, but you know, here's a way for me to get value out of the cloud. So that one, the hybrid scenarios and being able to do backup and disaster recovery, we think those are great ways to go. And when you're starting to target, say, the public cloud itself, another great way that people will target that is if you start doing, you know, consumer-facing web applications, for example, if it's marketing campaigns or things like that that may run for a period of time, they may get huge hits, and then they may actually, you know, drift down until I move off to the next campaign. So that's another great example of being able to write And, you know, Azure Websites is an awesome way to build those apps. Super productive. Sit right in Visual Studio, file a new project, publish. You know, it's like, you couldn't make it easier. It's that's a great example of the platform as a service capability. And, you know, Azure Websites also available for the Azure Pack. Jeff showed that today.
Yeah, that was a cool demo as well. That was a cool demo as well. Two other announcements that kind of piqued my interest. Azure Batch.
Yes.
And I would love for you to elaborate that, particularly in relationship to the demo that we saw today, and then finally the Azure Marketplace, because again, trying to get quickly, rapidly, because I think that's kind of the new world of IT. We really have to make decisions, be very agile, and try to take advantage of that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So on the batch one, and I'm very excited about this, because one of the things, you know, within Microsoft, obviously we've written a lot more scale out software, more like Team Foundation Service, the build components that are there, you know, the grid encoding system for Windows Azure Media Services. We have all these examples internally where you really just need to have, you know, a VM pool, and the pool can scale up and it can scale down, and you have to be there, you know. Typical Microsoft fashion, I think I've probably got 15 of them internally that people have written. We got a lot of great developers, and you know, there's reasons for that, because it didn't exist, but this was kind of the pattern we saw. We also saw that, you know, we had customers that were trying to do the same thing. Towers Watson, you know, was an example that I mentioned today. Mm-hmm. So what we decided to do was to set out and to go, let's go build this as a service. Let's, you know, we don't need to go build 15 of them. And in fact, let's do it in a way that we can utilize it internally, and we can prove it out ourselves, and then we can turn around and use it, you know, for customers that need the same thing. And so we built out the service. We actually do use it for media encoding. So if you use media services, you know, live media encoding app that we have, that's a more of a finished, you know, kind of service that we have, a higher level service. It actually uses Azure Batch under the covers. They were one of the earliest, you know, users of that to basically help us vet it. And we have other examples internally that we're getting more and more, you know, that are coming along. So the cool thing to me, stop worrying about the plumbing. Right? I mean, because you think about it, it's like, I want VMs of size, I want to scale them up. When I'm done, I want them shut down. What do I deal with failure cases? If for whatever reason my VM or my app dies, can I reschedule the job? You know, how do I deal with the telemetry around how everything is going? And really the management side of this too, like, you know, is it done? How much did it cost me? You know, those sort of things. So also earlier this year, we bought a company named Green Button out of New Zealand, and they actually, you know, have a bunch of this, you know, technology that was also used for batch. So we were kind of both independently, you know, developing this technology. And so when we acquired Green Button, we actually integrated those assets. And so the batch piece you saw today came from our Azure team as we built it out, and the portal that you saw, the cool portal that was showing the usage and the kickoff components, that's part of the Green Button style that we have, and we're integrating that into the Microsoft product. You put those two things together, and you know, that was the cool demo that we saw today.
Yeah.
man, that's just, that's free as a hardcore developer, man, I love solutions like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You mentioned that, you know, the marketplace as well. So this is another great example where, you know, people want to be able to use software that, you know, they're already familiar with, that I may already have solutions on, but they want to use it in this public cloud, you know, component. And so this is where the marketplace comes in. And what we've done is we've, you know, curated really a set. So this, you know, you're not going to walk up here and see like a gazillion, you know, like sometimes you see in app stores for devices, you know, a gazillion stuff, and I don't know which of these things make sense. Like, we've actually worked, you know, with the partners in the ISVs to, you know, really make sure it's a great experience for that. And we've integrated it, you know, into things like, you know, VM extensions. It's easy to browse. There's, in particular cases, you can do bring your own license. So if I'm already working with a vendor and I have a license already, you know, a relationship with that ISV, then I can bring that along and have that flexibility too. So, you know, it's a very flexible thing. And, you know, today actually we are announcing it is open. It is ready. It's GA. We had it in preview for a little bit to just make sure it was good to go. And we released a new portal this morning, which changed some of our interfaces right before the keynote, but all in a good way, and everything works. So that's what we would expect. But we've actually released the new version of the marketplace, and it's out there, and it's good to go.
We've got about a minute left, and the one last thing that I want to kind of touch upon, because I think this is pretty big for the audience at home, talk about, with all of these changes that we've had in Azure, all of these new features, you get a chance and an opportunity to sit down and talk to customers who actually are adopting this stuff. What is that kind of, what's the feedback that you're getting from them? And then, more, I guess more importantly, how does that feedback then get integrated into such a rapid development cycle on your team?
Oh, yeah. No, we get awesome feedback, especially from, you know, folks that are helping us with the private previews, the limited previews. You know, that's kind of our taxonomy. And then we move into regular preview. And you saw that today with a couple of the services that are out there. So to me, this is a constant iterative, you know, environment. I mean, internally, we use the best of flighting and experimentation techniques. You know, we'll do split testing, A-B testing, you know, those sorts of things as well. And it allows us to try out these new features constantly. I mean, it's interesting, you wind up, you know, flipping the environment on its head. So rather than having these big kind of waterfall sort of pieces, you actually start taking what would have been unit tests and move it into monitoring instead. And, you know, doing automatic rollbacks and things like that. And those are techniques that are just, you know, they're you know, heavily in use in this environment. It's what allows us to go so fast. So that means when we have, you know, customers that are trying this stuff out, we can respond very rapidly and add, you know, new features as they come through. We just released multi-NIC support. That was another, you know, very common ask. So what we typically will do is we'll sit down with customers, and in a lot of ways, you know, this part of the process is similar to when we used to do, you know, the box products, our kind of 2-year schedules. You know, get the feedback, you know, what things are you looking for, what would help you? I mean, what problems are you trying to solve? How can I solve that? That part's actually the same. The thing is, the ability to compress this down and, like, basically be asking those questions every week and getting feedback and being able to say, you know what, yeah, that feature's actually ready in 2 months and here it is.
Wow.
And it's a constant delivery. And I've done things where I visited with a customer, you know, like in June, and we talked through it, and they're like, hey, it's great, but I really need, like, you know, these 5 features, a bunch of networking features, for example. And I met with the same customer that came back 6 months later, and we chatted about this, and it's like, I'm like, so, you know, we implemented all 6 and they're available. It's like, yeah, we know, we picked it up. I can't believe how fast you guys move. I've never seen that before. So, which is, you know, is great for the team. I think it's kind of rewarding to see that in there. So.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. I could sit and chat with you about this stuff for ages because I'm an Azure guy at heart, but we're going to dive deep a little bit more into infrastructure as a service coming up. Rickster's back with Corey Sanders. Stay around. Remember, you can ask your questions right here. We're live from Barcelona TechEd 2014 on Channel 9.